Welcome along, everybody. Right, so this is for the Patreons, our usual end of the week look back at whatever's happened in midweek. In this case, a couple of interesting games in midweek. Brief look forward to the weekend, but we won't spend too long dwelling on that, to be honest with you. But we're also making this available as a podcast because over the next couple of weeks, we'll still be chatting about the football, but we're going to do it on Patreon because our producer is off, basically, in short. And so so they will be here and we'll tweet out when we've done them. And so basically come and we'll make them free, a season of goodwill to all men and women and all of that. So Merry Christmas to everybody. But they're sort of free anyway, aren't they? So anyway, but thank you to the Patreons for your yes. kind support of us. And we will. So we'll get back to doing Patreon only content soon. But we will just for the next couple of weeks over Christmas, we'll make it available to everybody. Right then, Terry, a couple of interesting games in the week. Obviously, Celta Vigo against Cadiz was the leftover game that we didn't talk about on Monday. But let's talk about the. We'll get to that. But we'll talk about the big two, the traditional big two, and. Yet again, Terry, back-to-back weekends or back-to-back rounds where the big two both won games. Where do you want to start? Shall we do? We'll do Barcelona Real Sociedad, shall we? As it's the most recent one. Now I believe you were on La Liga TV saying that Real Sociedad would win the game. it's not a humiliating prediction, is it? Because they could have, couldn't they? It was. I thought they were a little bit passive, and actually, when they had to go on the front foot. I thought, actually, yeah, they're really good, aren't they, in the closing stages?
Yeah, and they should have scored. I mean, Isak had a couple of chances. Monreal had a good chance at the far post. They were wasteful and other good opportunities. Januzaj, when he got the injury, was great piece of skill, great run, and just overhit the cross, then went down with a hamstring injury. So, no, I did it for to give the programme some balance because Sidlow was on, Graham Hunt, it was a really good show, really enjoyed it. I think they both went for score draws. Gus Poyet was on, and he went through a high-scoring victory for Barcelona. And I just thought, you know what, this is one of those games where it's not given. And I based it on the team selection as well. Real Sociedad had some players missing, important players, David Silva, Oyarzabal, Elizondo at the back. But Barcelona opted to go with the two younger central defenders, Araujo and Mingueza, and alongside Serginho Dest. And I looked in, I thought it was two 21-year-olds and a 20-year-old in the back four. Real Sociedad have got the potential to cause them problems. And they did. It was a really good game. Really enjoyed it. It wasn't the worst prediction in the world. Real Sociedad could have won it. Even in terms of possession, Barcelona just shaded it on attempts at goal. But it was a really, really good watch. Thoroughly enjoyed it. As you say, Real Sociedad came on strong at the end. And they were guilty of missing really good opportunities. Barcelona showed good character and good spirit. To hold on for the win, but it was a tough game, and it looked like a top of the table clash, to be honest.
Yeah. So the nature of the goals.
I say that. Sorry, I have to explain. Although Barcelona are not at the top of the table, Real Sociedad were, of course. But it looked like a two teams playing each other that are capable of being near the top of the league.
Yeah. Oh no, it's a good competition for the league, isn't it? Because if we do the league table now, Atleti 26. Now the games are all wildly all over the place, aren't they? They've played 11. Real Sociedad 26 points, 14 games. Real Madrid 26 points from 13 games. Villarreal 22 points from 13, Barca 20 points from 12 games. Not a terrible position to be in, is it? I mean, funny enough, Graham in the commentary is adamant that Barcelona haven't got what it takes to win the league, and you know, in his way, obviously he's based that on a deep knowledge. So, and it's not just on the basis of the points per game tally at the moment. He doesn't think they've got what it takes to win the league. The goals were interesting, weren't they? I mean, there's always an element of luck about a goal. That's football in a way, isn't it? It fell kindly for Jordi Alba, put his swinger through it. A brilliant
great
strike.
Finish.
Yeah. Yeah. And then De Jong got a goal. I thought he was onside.
I did.
And I was thinking, and we all need to learn that the goal isn't done when the ball hits the back of the net or the flag goes up or the whistle blows. It's done when the VAR has done, isn't it? So
exactly.
But then...
I thought it was, certainly at the very least, debatable.
Yeah.
Immediately.
Yeah.
And it was an important goal from De Jong. Jordi Alba was good, untidy defending from Barcelona in terms of the goal they conceded.
Yeah.
but it was a no, it was a good game. I guess we're going to have to refer to Griezmann at some stage in this episode of the podcast.
A couple of reasons.
The obvious one.
Yeah.
And the other obvious one.
Yes. So go on then. Well,
I'm not on to hair envy. Why should I be? Look. but there's a time and a place, surely. If he'd have got 15 goals already by this time of the season and Barcelona sitting top of the league, sitting pretty, then maybe go for some outrageous hairstyle. But in these particular times where he's unconvincing, Barcelona are unconvincing, to turn up looking like a...
Go on. Oh, don't.
Britney Spears from a video. There's a great picture of Messi looking at him thinking, but there's a photo of Griezmann smiling with his plaits.
when you've got 25.
And Messi looking at him thinking, is it really? Has it come to this? It's brave. Listen, I had a perm.
I had to.
I had to, because everybody had a perm in the team.
You could have stood strong, Terry. You could have been the one.
No, I didn't. I buckled. And the moustache, of course. Yeah. So it was... why do it?
And then, obviously, in a Samson-like way, it has made him a bad footballer. let's be fair.
The goal, you
call it the goal because it looks like it's going to be a goal. You know what he strikes me as? We'll get to Messi in a bit. It just strikes me as is overthinking stuff.
No, I can explain this. I've done exactly the same. I've got the 100% experience of what he did. And I can explain it in tiny detail.
It's not
an excuse. I did exactly the same. When you're sliding in like that.
Yeah.
Split second, it's instinct. You just slide in. If you look at the connection, it hits the heel of the foot.
Yeah.
And I remember doing, it was a League Cup match for Coventry at Walsall. We won the game, so it wasn't, and I'd scored a couple, I think. It wasn't drastically important. And it's one of those things that sticks in my mind throughout my career, 300 plus games. That night at Walsall comes flooding back. And the last thing I needed just before Christmas was seeing Griezmann doing that and bringing it all back to me again. So you're out of control.
Right, okay. Basically.
You're throwing yourself onto a cross where you believe at that range, you only need to get something on it.
Yeah.
The right connection will take it into the goal. But if you think the ball is coming across, I'll try and explain this. The ball is coming across at great speed. You're away from the action, so you slide in. And 9 times out of 10, it will hit the part of the foot that will take it in a right angle towards the goal. But there are occasions, and if Griezmann's done it last night, I did it. Other players, I've seen it happen quite a lot, actually. If it hits the heel, it goes back the way it came.
Yeah, because you've gone in too early, haven't you? Because he's there instead of it for the camera for everybody in the podcast. So the ball's coming here. I should have a football ready. And if you meet it there, you're fine, aren't you? Bang.
Yeah.
But if you're there first, the ball hits you and goes that way, doesn't it?
And we're looking at that. How much of a fraction of a second?
Yeah.
Is that?
But I wonder with him. I also think let's do Messi as well at the same time, because Messi had another opportunity. Messi's been the most natural, brilliant footballer that we've seen that we've been blessed to see. Sometimes I look at him and I think he's thinking things through that he didn't used to think through.
Yeah.
In situations, he's thinking, well, what should I do here? And he had one where he had a break last night.
Brilliant run.
Yeah.
Great
dribble. And he sort of dithered a little bit and got tackled.
And there was a pass back run as well.
Yeah.
Where he run from deep, beat a player, as we've seen him do thousands of times in his own half, under pressure, did a little shimmy, got out of trouble, back to goal, went on a run and then dropped his shoulder on a couple of others and then just, it was almost like a pass back.
Yeah.
Where in the past we've seen him. I'm Viva La Liga last night, I was saying, and I said on the podcast that the goal he has confidence with at the moment is that the finish he has confidence with is that drilling it across towards the far post. The other goals that we normally associate with Messi in the past, we're not seeing him score at the moment. He's not getting in the position to beat the goalkeeper with a little dink. We haven't seen that, have we, for a long time. So he's not missing those chances. He's not getting those chances. You know, when he goes through and the goalkeeper comes out and he just dinks it over. And we've seen that, loads of times. That's one method that he uses. The free kicks are not anywhere near what they should have been. And the one where he rolls it, curls it, passes it almost with his left foot down to the goalkeeper's right. we're not seeing that finish. They're going wide to the target, or the goalkeepers are saving them. So it's interesting. If you look, the free kicks, that's down to him to improve on. He's not getting in the positions to finish with the little dink when he's got a one-on-one versus the goalkeeper. And that pass one where he rolls it into, bends it into the bottom corner, that's something that, you know, he needs to find that magic again. And he was okay last night, wasn't he? He was good, but not great, which we, you know, have witnessed in the rest of his career.
And crucially, not playing well enough to carry a team at the moment in the way that he has. Oh, you know, the Valverde years, you could almost describe as Messi carrying a team through.
But he did have Suarez and Neymar.
Yeah, yeah.
So he wasn't carrying an entire front line. And there was experienced pros in the midfield and in defence and stuff like that. Whereas now, as I said, we had the two young centre-backs, the young full-back. The three of them did really well. Dest is proving to be a decent signing. And Araujo and Mingueza looked really good last night. So credit to Ronald Koeman for having the courage. Longley and Titi were on the bench in a big game to trust the two youngsters. It paid off. The outstanding player, that was Pedri.
Yes, I was going to ask you about him. So yeah,
incredible.
Just gone 18, hasn't he? Incredible.
Yeah, and it's the surprising elements of his game that I'm most impressed with. It's not just his skills; it's his maturity. You know, he's the saving challenge when Isak should have scored. He shouldn't have allowed Pedri the chance to make the block.
Oh, Isak,
and get the challenge and get the challenge. It was heavy touches. Isak looked like a player who hasn't been scoring lately. But Pedri spotted the danger. He looked like Carlos Puyol.
Yeah.
When he was running across, you know, and he's a midfield player.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was running across, you know, I don't know where his best position is. I think in a midfield three.
Right. So what, so throw him forward 5 years, what kind of player will he be?
Modric, Iniesta.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
I think his size is similar to those two players. He has the courage and the strength to withstand the physical nature of the game. He's great at passing, fantastic dribbler. And it's the maturity, spots danger. And, you know, how comes he was the only one that spotted that? And he's in midfield, a sort of midfielder-ish position last night, and got back and spotted the danger and made the challenge, didn't worry about, you know, maybe the possibility of getting hurt, which he obviously did when he collided with the post. But he's all around maturity. He just knows when to do the right thing at the right time. I put a thing on Twitter saying, how did they pay €5 million for him?
Yeah.
I was advised, which I was hoping was the case, that there are add-ons.
Up to 25.
Which could take it to 25.
Yeah.
Still, at the moment, that looks a steal. So with Pedri and Fati in particular, and Sergiño Dest, maybe, you know, still we need more evidence. But I think with Fati and Pedri in particular, they, you know, Barcelona look in really good shape in terms of the young players of the future.
They get some right, don't they? I know that they've got some very high-profile, expensive ones wrong in terms of structure of the deal and how much they pay for a deal. But that is an example of getting it right, isn't it? In that they paid a small fee by modern standards.
John, 14-year-old kids in England, Premier League clubs, go for more than that.
Yeah.
12, 13, 14-year-old boys
go
for more than that in the Premier League. I recently did a Manchester United under-23 game, and their team, the players, comes about £30 million in their under-23 team.
Yeah.
It was only on 3, 4, 5 of them. It wasn't all of them. But the sum total added up to approximately £30 million.
Yeah.
Young Manchester United team and Barcelona managed to pinch Pedri, who'd been playing regular at Las Palmas at 16 and 17. You have to applaud the scouting, but it's bloody obvious, isn't it? When you can't watch a game, you go, oh, he's pretty good.
Yeah.
10 minutes into the game, how old is he? 16. And how many games has he played? Oh, he's 20th game of the season. And he plays like this every week. Yeah, how much do you want for him?
Yeah.
You know, it's glaring the obvious. Comes from Tenerife, played for Las Palmas. Another one of those Canary Island players that looks to be very, very, very special. So he's a one of the big reasons to watch Barcelona at the moment. If you haven't got La Liga TV, trust me, you know, try and get to watch Barcelona. It may not be the best version of Barcelona we've seen in the last 20 years, but he's worth watching.
Copa del Rey games coming up on La Liga TV, so people in the UK and Ireland can watch the Copa del Rey. Fancy that, Terry? Eh? we used to do a lot of Copa del Rey games back in the Sky days, but there we are. But it's back.
I used to love the Copa del Rey as well.
And it was intense, wasn't it? The January was intense, wasn't it?
Yeah,
all those games.
Yeah.
Anyway, and so the load of games last night, load more tonight. But Real Madrid also played in this midweek as well. So these are the games. We talked about this the other day. It's like the Spanish Super Cup games brought forward. They could have just called this the Spanish Super Cup, couldn't they, thinking about it? It's a very complicated way around of doing it.
Yeah, we would have Real Madrid against Barcelona in the final now.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if they're going to kick them apart in the...
In the draw.
Yeah.
Hot balls and cold balls. Anyway, let's talk about the football. So this game, the massive moment in this game was Raul Garcia getting himself sent off. Was it 13 minutes? Second yellow card, 13 minutes in. I mean, I know if you haven't been following it, I think everyone following this has been following Raul Garcia for a long time. How would we describe? I've called him a shithouse many times in the past. We were denied the derby against Sergio Ramos, weren't we? In this one, because he got sent off so early. But he put his side in a massive hole, didn't he?
Yeah, and do you know what? I like Raul Garcia. He is what he is.
Yeah, but he's normally clever, isn't he? And he normally winds other people up. But yeah, anyway, carry on.
I wonder if he was a little bit irritated and over-anxious because he hasn't been playing lately. Mm. And Villalibre has been playing. I found it remarkable that Villalibre, after playing so well in recent games and Athletic playing well, didn't play in this match.
Yeah.
I was surprised at that choice. So Raul Garcia therefore let his manager down, who showed faith in him, and let his teammates down. So I wonder whether he was fired up a little bit more than usual. And the two fouls were clear yellow cards. No, there can be no doubt. So to do the first one so early in the game, then to repeat the offence... You know, 7 minutes later was
for nothing.
So naive,
nothing part of the
nowhere position.
Yeah,
and so naive. But then the contradiction there is when he was talking to Toni Kroos, there was no anger.
No,
the pair of them, Toni Kroos was almost saying, "Well, I didn't ask for it. It was your problem. You left one on me twice now.
Yeah.
I don't see how you can complain." And Raul Garcia wasn't gesticulating to Toni Kroos that he'd made a meal of it. He wasn't angry at the referee. It was just two untidy challenges that were both yellow cards.
Yeah.
And that was from then on, you're thinking the best Athletic can hope for is a draw. And when they go behind just before halftime to Toni Kroos, you're thinking it's probably beyond them now. And then the way they came out in the second half, when they scored for Ander Kappa, they actually deserved it, didn't they?
I thought they were more progressive than I expected them to be. When he was sent off, I thought we'd then see them just retreat back to the edge of the penalty area, you know, two banks of four. But they were defensively disciplined, weren't they? But they attacked.
With their defenders. With their defenders. They didn't call everybody back and leave Iñaki Williams-Moles up on his own. For a lot of that game, you didn't really notice that Athletic only had 10 players. Because there was no 4-4-1 formation. They continued to play. They continued to get players into support attacking positions, decent amount of share of possession. But the game was it defined in the last minute of the match, wasn't it?
Yes. You know,
Benzema gets the second goal. Good header.
Seconds earlier.
Good movement.
Yeah.
And then just before the end of the game, Vesga goes through.
Yeah.
Good work down the right. Finds himself a half-decent finish. Good save from Courtois and literally Real Madrid. That's the only time in the game Athletic looked beaten. Yeah. I think they realised that was their chance, their last chance. So late in the game, they probably weren't going to get another one. And for the only time for the 80-plus minutes that they played with 10 men, they didn't chase back as quick. There was space at the back. Defence looked a bit ponderous and Benzema made the most of it with a good move across the the width of the defence to make sure he kept on sides and a tidy finish. So Benzema was stand out. Courtois was stand out because of that one save. Modric played well again. Kroos played well again. It was a good performance from Real Madrid, who look very similar now to the team that won the league at the end of last season.
Yeah.
They're not I wouldn't say not convincing. They're not spectacular, but they look harder to score against again. And they obviously need Benzema to be the player to come up with the goals until Hazard comes back, until there's a return to form for Asensio. So it's they're heavily reliant on Benzema at the moment, but other players are playing well and they're getting the job done. Four straight wins in different competitions means they're suddenly looking in good shape again.
So what are you going to do in January if you are the Real Madrid hierarchy, if you're Zidane? Are you spending money to try and get someone in? Are you thinking there's no point in the circumstances?
Yeah. Don't see any point. Where would you spend the money? And in what department? Of the
cover field? For Hazard, I think. Would that be... Oh, sell his co...
Vinicius. Yeah. I mean, Vinicius and Asensio should be cover for Hazard. And I've not been his biggest fan in terms of the overall quality for Real Madrid, but you can't argue with a job Lucas Vasquez does.
He's the
ideal player, actually. Nacho is another one. We spoke for years on the podcast. If you put them both in, I don't know, Valladolid, let's see how good they were. But Real Madrid, they're content with the position they have in the squad and they do a fantastic job when called upon. Vasquez at right back, right wing. Yeah, I wouldn't see a desperate need to go out and spend. They've got two centre-forwards that they don't use, in Jovic and Mariano Diaz. Isco, maybe if a club come in with the right offer, and maybe if Isco was inclined to move on, that might be somewhere which might free up some money.
He should go, shouldn't he, Isco? Because coming on for bits and bobs, Zidane's never really seemed to have had a position for him, never really seemed to have trusted him with a role.
Yeah, but is Isco probably about 28 now?
Yeah.
I'm guessing without having done the research.
I'll find it out. Carry on.
he could. It might be a case of now or never, mightn't it? Yeah. Loan parties for Real Madrid to still get a decent fee, for a club to be willing to spend out a decent amount of money on a player who is approaching the who's at
28.
You wouldn't want to be going 29, 30 if you're Real Madrid. If you're a club that's buying Isco, you wouldn't want to pay big money. So whether it's now in January or in the summer, I think we're probably seeing the last of Isco's seasons at Real Madrid. Then he has to go to a place, from Isco's point of view, he has to go to a place where he's going to play in his best position. After all these years, I think he's a fabulous footballer. I've always enjoyed watching Isco. I don't know where his best position is, other than the number 10.
Yeah, which Real Madrid, Zidane never plays with. So.
And most unfortunately, John, a lot of teams are not playing a number 10.
Yeah.
And there's probably a whole list of players that are capable of being influential playing the number 10 position, and none of them play there anymore.
Yeah.
So it's gone out of fashion.
Yeah.
You can't play him on the wing. You can in a 3. You can't play him on the wing in a 4 because he's up and down the pitch tracking fullbacks running forward. That's not a strength of his. Can you play him in midfield in a 2? No. Can he play in a 3-man midfield if your team dominate possession? So it'd be interesting to see, where it pans out for him.
Yeah. So I guess if they could get decent, not a massive fee to be honest, for Isco or Jovic or somebody, if they could get one of those kind of unused, overpaid players out, they might do some business. Otherwise, it's not worth forcing it.
And that time of the year as well.
Yeah.
And I still think as a squad, I still think they're in pretty good shape, to be honest. It was just we know the argument about Real Madrid is motivation, the application.
Yeah.
Because on their day, this team could still win the Champions League.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have no doubt about that.
Yeah.
And they could still win the Liga. I have no doubt about that. But it's just hammering it, making sure that Dan is on top of them. Game in, game out. No coincidence again, of course, that Ramos is back and he does keep an eye on the players a little bit more when he's at the heart of the defence and doesn't let them get complacent. Although he does sometimes, he doesn't let the rest of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he's, you know, Real Madrid, I think, in pretty good shape.
Yeah.
Atletico in better shape, by the way, in terms of the league position. And
squad, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's a position of strength now for Atletico, despite losing to Real Madrid. Yeah.
Just don't panic. Don't.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's a... With Barcelona creeping up the table now, Sevilla creeping up the table. It's Villarreal, Real Sociedad in good form.
And Celta Vigo, Terry, as well. Celta Vigo to win the league. How's that as a prediction?
You know, well, what? Look at it. Surprised.
Hang on, I'll share on the screen for...
The ninth.
Yeah. It's extraordinary, isn't it? When I, at the end of that game, I looked at the bottom, because they were bottom a couple of weeks ago, weren't they? And then, so...
That's why they made the managerial change. Yeah. 3 wins in 4, and the only defeat came at Sevilla.
Yeah.
So at this stage of the season, that's how quickly you can turn it around. Real Madrid have been a big turnaround in recent weeks with their league position. Celta Vigo, you know, clearly with theirs. And they were terrific to watch. Yeah. Been banging on it for ages about it. They've got good players, a good age. They've got a good blend of youth and experience. Technically, they're really good. They just needed some guidance and a system that everyone believed in. Players in the right position, and you know they were terrific. I mean, Cadiz weren't bad. Mm. The only thing I'd say about Cadiz, they were forced into being more attack minded, and they actually looked quite good.
Yeah.
So there's more to come from Cadiz in an attacking mindset, but I'm not so sure that the coach Severo will allow and permit that to happen.
Yeah.
After a 4-0 thumping in the first half. Which led to the 4-0 defeat, obviously, then I think there might be a refocus from Cadiz on not being as attack-minded and open as they were against Celta Vigo. But Celta were terrific. Aspas, all of them, all played well. Dennis Suarez looks at home in the midfield three, another one of those players that maybe I've never been sure what his best position is, but the way he's playing alongside Tapia and Brais Mendes, it's a good midfield three. The front three is excellent. Aspas, Nolito, Santi Mina. Nothing wrong with that. And they're more than, you know, capable at the back. Alaza and Hugo Mayer are good defenders. Araujo played. Murillo was missing as well. So it's Aidu. They're good players. It was always a mystery to me as to why Oscar Garcia complicated it so much to the extent the players had no idea what they were doing from one week to the next and from one half to the next in a game of football.
It's a complicated club as well, isn't it? They've rattled through the changes, managerial appointments and stuff in recent seasons, haven't they? Where, you know, as I know you've advocated before for simple football, just because a coach at a certain level and a club at a certain level as well can be just be thinking, oh, we'll do this, we'll do this, we'll do this, we'll do this. And sometimes they slow down, calm down.
Yeah.
Give something a chance to work before you move on to the next.
And the hard part, John, they've done well as a club. They've got good players.
Yeah.
Their transfer policy is pretty good. You know, whether it's bringing back Nolito and Aspas or buying Santi Mina from Valencia, bringing in Denis Suarez back to the club. I'd like to have seen Rafinha there. I think that was a loss to them.
Yeah.
But I think they're overcoming that now.
Yeah.
Aidu is a good player. Murillo is a good signing. Alaza is loan, I think, is permanent now. A good player. So the hardest part is buying the right players, signing the right players, and then supplementing it with good young players coming through, which they've got as well.
It's a good season, isn't it? I know it's an interesting balance because some seasons in the league or in other leagues as well, you have a spell where you have a great team with a clear identity, and you look back, oh wow, the Pep Guardiola Barcelona years, and and you look back, and think, wow, that was a brilliant team doing brilliant stuff. But at other times, you have a slightly shambolic league, but I think the financial fair play is playing a part, isn't it? And the more equal distribution of TV money means that you've got this. I mean, you know, Celta Vigo, as we say, are ninth, they're only 5 points off bottom. And it shows, you know, it's a more even La Liga. It's very hard to predict both at the top and the bottom. So you've got a really good league all the way through to the point where you're looking at it and it's very hard to predict where everyone will be in a month's time, which is great. But on the other side, you don't have a classic...
iconic team.
There's nothing iconic about this season, but it is enjoyable, isn't it? And it's exciting.
It's tight at the top, as you say, and so compressed in terms of two or three wins, two or three defeats on the trot, can take you all over the place. I don't think there's an obvious candidate in terms of picking who's going to get relegated, which is a good sign. Mm. And also, you know, it goes back to the days where the Clásicos pretty much decided the league.
Yeah.
Until Atletico Madrid came along and gate crashed it and made it life difficult.
Yeah, the 100-point seasons. Yeah,
yeah, they
were scoring 120 goals a season.
Exactly. Yeah. And there were games we commentated on together where it was done after half an hour, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And then you're filling in 60, 70 minutes, hoping that Barcelona or Real Madrid, hoping that Ronaldo and Messi and whoever else was playing continued to search for goals. And then sometimes it ended up 8 and it was a 10 in one, I think I can remember. I'm sure I can remember it.
I did Real Madrid beating Granada 9-1, I think. That was the biggest I've ever done. Yeah. Yeah.
And that was uncomfortable, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because there was such a big gap. The gap has dropped. The quality has dropped to the top and it's closed up on the rest of the league. To the extent that every game, we'll look ahead to this weekend's games.
Well, let's do that, shall we? Yeah.
I think we will all agree who we think will win. But we're not as convinced as we used to be 7, 8, 10 years ago.
So Atleti have got Elche, Barca have got Valencia, Eibar have got Real Madrid. Got Eibar, probably that way around, isn't it? In this round of games, let me just check. I'll read them all out. In fact, Atletico back in action first again, aren't they? So it's Atletico against Huesca Friday night, Atleti against Elche, Barca, Valencia, Levante, Real Sociedad, Osasuna, Villarreal, Sevilla, Valladolid. Then Sunday is Celta against Alaves, big game again, Granada, Betis, Cadiz, Getafe, Eibar, Real Madrid. That's 10, isn't it? And then 2 days after that, we start again.
Yep. Now, I would say, I mean, we're looking at Atletico against Elche. Hmm. I think we would. Sorry, I held the camera there.
Old school sharing.
Cheating, yeah. Atletico against Elche. Probably you would imagine Atletico bounce back. They won in the Copa del Rey. Barcelona, Valencia in the past, we're probably looking at that as a tough game. It probably still will be, but not to the extent that it used to be when Valencia were flying high and were really difficult opponents for Barcelona. Barcelona, you know, another home game against a team that are finding their way. Hard to beat, good spirit, good character, don't have a lot of possession. Not too many options for Javi Gracia, so I would imagine Barcelona to win that. Eibar, Real Madrid, I don't know. Mm. I really don't know. I obviously will say Real Madrid, that's the easiest thing to say, but Eibar got a good result, good performance against Real Sociedad last week.
He overcomplicates it sometimes, doesn't he, against the big teams? I think Mendilibar, that's the one thing that
goes
say.
Away from the system that suits him. Kike Garcia, Sergio Henrique up front, Pozzo, and my favorite Brian Hill, out wide. Couple of midfielders, Pape Diop, Exposito, routine back four, and play your normal style. But we might see a 4-3-3, 4-5-1.
Which
takes it away. But no, I think that could be a tricky fixture for Real Madrid, or it could be Real Madrid at their best and win 3-0. That's as you said, that's the beauty of the league this season.
Yes. Right. So enjoy those games, everybody. We'll be back at some point. It's a fracture clinic again on Monday, Terry. So I'm not promising we'll be there Monday, but like I say, so we will be, we'll be doing them on Patreon. So it's patreon.com/LTEL. So just go and have a look, and there is always some stuff on there that is free, and we'll make sure that we put the standard podcast on there for free for the next couple of weeks as we try and keep up. There's just a lot of football to be watched, Terry, because I'm working on working on the Premier League. I'm commentating some Championship games and then watching La Liga games. So it's brilliant. I mean, I'm not, you know, you really shouldn't complain, but I think that's a round done. When's the next one start?
Oh, today.
anyway, you know, there are worse things you could do. So enjoy the football, everybody, and we'll see you for another one of these next week.